Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. I almost said another podcast name. I haven't been doing any other podcasts. I did like three or four at the same time once, and I haven't done one in a while. My brain just went back a year or whatever, but we're rolling with the intro. We're sticking through it. I'm joined, as always, by Kevin Zimmerman. My name is Kellen Olson. Kevin, two losses for the Suns this week. We'll talk about a bit. There's been a couple of themes throughout those losses that we will discuss. One of them is TJ Warren. Another one is if Kelly Oubre Jr. should start. And the third one, which came up most recently, is fouls. Suns are getting called for a lot of them. And it doesn't help when the refs are bad at their job certain nights when they aren't getting calls, too, at the same time.
I actually thought they were, and the numbers, I mean, they had more free throws. They had more personals against the Raptors than we're going against them. But when this has been building, where the Suns usually haven't been on that other side, their frustration builds. And then when you have last night, more than any other game, like really egregious non-calls, like
there were like three or four.
There was Rashawn Holmes going up. There was before Oubre. Mikal had position, and I think it was Siakam was backing him down and just elbowed into his chest. He fell down, and the Raptors got an easy layup. And that's one of those where, like, I hate it when they call it, but they often will call, like, hey, even if you have your pivot foot down, if you pivot into a guy and he's not moving, they will get you for an offensive foul. They called nothing there. And then the one that set Josh Jackson off completely, leading to a flagrant and a tech, was the foul or non-call on Kelly Oubre. Went up, had a shove in his back, lower back. That's with the ref standing right there, and that's the easiest call in the book. Josh got mad. And if you look at the numbers, the Suns have been the worst team as far as differential, both free throw makes, free throw attempts, by a pretty wide margin. It's like 4.5 free throw makes averaged in the favor of their opponent per game, and they lose by 8.5 points or something like that. So that's half the differential, and so it's a big deal. What do you actually see that as? Refs biased against them? They're a young team, they haven't earned respect, or do you actually think it's they're not earning it?
I think there's a little bit of everything. There were a couple calls that you didn't even mention. There was one where D'Anthony Melton was sliding his feet and he held his hands straight up on a drive and got called for a foul. And
yeah,
that flashed me back to so much Pac-12 basketball, where any contact around the rim is a foul, no matter where your hands are or anything.
If you've played in the Pac-12, the rules just follow you, apparently.
Yeah, Melton just laughed and didn't even ask the ref or whatever. He would just laughed because there was no other way to really react to it. I didn't see anyone else getting too upset about that one, but then the one that really got me was Booker. Always, he has refs know that he's looking for, if there's contact, I'm going to try and shoot it and draw a shooting foul. Has that reputation of being that guy. So when he was at the three-point line, top of the key, a pick was coming, and in order to get an advantage on that pick, whoever was defending him, I think it might have been Lowry or Danny Green, put their hand in, and he shot the ball and drew contact. And he got a foul call, but it wasn't a shooting foul.
It was on the ground, yeah.
And when the cameras cut to the conversation between Booker and the referee, I could read his lips, was saying, "You're trying to draw the foul. You're trying to draw the foul." And I'm like,
that's continuation, dog.
Yes, that is what he is doing, and you need to call it. It doesn't matter if he's looking for the foul call or not. They're trying to draw it on purpose. That's part of basketball. So that was pretty confusing. And I think overall, I believe that this is only my opinion with no real substance beyond it. I just think it would be really tiring for me to hear a really bad team complaining to me about stuff over and over again when they keep giving up open shots over and over again. And the one possession you guys play defense, you guys are going to get mad at me for not calling a foul. That is not what's happening. I'm not saying that it's 9 out of 10 possessions or an open shot or anything like that. But I think there are certain times when I see the Suns arguing where I say to myself, you don't need to argue here. You can pick your battles with them right now. They already clearly don't like you. I think there's that. The refs don't like them. They complain way too much for a really bad team.
So yeah, yeah.
That's pretty obvious, I think.
I think they've actually, for the most part this year, up to the last few weeks, been good because they used to have that reputation, right? They used to have the Morris twins. They used to have Bledsoe. TJ Warren yaps. PJ Tucker would yap a lot. And going back then, I wonder how much that... It shouldn't. But I wonder how much that influences these refs who know the Suns have this reputation of chirping. And so far this year, it hasn't been that bad, but when that frustration builds up, and to your point, I think a lot of it has been their fault. Like, DeAndre Ayton picks up fouls when he's just putting a hand on a guy's back when he's kind of facing him, which is different than if a guy's posting you up. You can put an armbar on him if they're posting you up and backing you down, but if they turn and face and are going to drive on you or shoot over you, like, get your hands out of there. And so that's the little things that you see where they're complaining, or they're just being overly aggressive. I think a podcast or two ago, there was that Melton play where he knocked the ball loose. The other player got it back, and then he went again to knock it loose, and the ref's going to get you that second time. Like, if he gave you a little leeway, just take the win that it disrupted a play and just stay solid. And it's kind of the same thing where Igor last week was talking about, don't take risks, where it's just play solid defense, keep your hands out of places unless you're off the ball and some guy doesn't have his head turned and you can rip him if he's dribbling around. So I think it's mostly, I haven't really noticed and I haven't really bought into the narrative that the refs are like doing this to the Suns only. But last night there were just bad calls, and so that's how it kind of came to a head. That's how I'm viewing it.
Yeah, that's why I tweeted last night. Fans are always going to be in your mentions about foul calls. It's just the reality of teams losing, is that when there's a bad, there are bad calls everywhere. You get used to bad calls after a while from a neutral perspective. I don't think you ever get used to them when you're a fan of a team, and I'm not, that's me saying that it's perfectly fine for you to get upset with refs when they're bad at their job, because that's part of being a fan.
I mean, what, a week or two ago, Kevin Durant took like 3 steps out of bounds, touched the ball while he was still out of bounds, and then that was that Rockets overtime game, right?
Yeah.
Where Harden had to hit a crazy shot for them to win. I'm not going to get into people thinking everything's rigged, but that doesn't help that. And I definitely don't think games are rigged against the Suns, because no one really cares about the Suns, let's be honest. Like, what did Zach Lowe write in his little piece today?
He said if you're a normal human being, you should have stopped watching the Suns 2 months ago, which is a very apt description
and we're
for
like,
our weird
we probably
group
both
of people.
We both nodded, probably. Like,
I did,
yeah.
If you think Kevin and I are robots about officiating, by the way, just watch a U of A basketball game with us with Pac-12 officiating. I don't think we've ever watched a U of A game together, but I lose my mind when I watch them, and I'm assuming you do too. Because
it's a lot worse than this, people.
There's enough bad young college basketball player things that guys do that just blow your head up. Caleb Tarczewski was my guy always and forever will be, that just made my head want to explode every single game I watched him. But on top of that, when they actually do things right and play Sean Miller's defense and they get called for fouls, it just would drive me insane. So we share your feelings in different ways. Well, to that point, I asked after the Denver win, I asked Igor Kokoskov about that, about the switching that they were doing, because they were doing a lot of switching, and the way that he described it is, like, he had a term for it, but I can't remember what it was called. And it was basically a way of him saying, we play an aggressive brand of switching. He said switching can often be lazy. It's got a reputation of being lazy sometimes because it's easy to do.
Yeah.
But there's an aggressive way of playing it, and that's the way that they play it. So with that, if you're playing more aggressive defensively, you're leaving yourself more open to foul calls, in my opinion. And when you're a young team that is still learning defense in general in the NBA, you're going to leave yourself more open to foul calls. So I think that has to do with it as well. I think the refs don't like the young, bad team complaining to them all the time. I can't compare it to the rest of the teams around the league and how often they complain, But there are definitely 5 to 6 times a game where I'm looking at Booker running back on defense and yelling at a ref still 15 seconds later. And then once that play ends, going back to talk to the referee again. So he's been in his ear for probably 2 minutes straight now. And other guys on the team do that too. Josh does that. My favorite thing with Josh is he doesn't say anything. He just looks at the ref for like 45 seconds. He'll jog back on defense and then face up on his man. And then just every 3 seconds turn around and look at the ref.
He's even been good where I've noticed he will go back and play. And then next break, he'll go up and like be cool with the ref and like talk about it, which is fine. Like, do that.
The players try and do this. There was a play last night where they showed Oubre. Oubre got the foul called on Siakam late, where Siakam hit both of the free throws.
Yeah.
And you saw Oubre saying, okay, I got you, I got you. Like, the players do that. All of them do that. That's what they're trying to do, but there's also a point where your emotions get the best of you, and we're not professional competitors for a living making millions of dollars doing so. So that probably influences in how upset they get from time to time. They get paid that much money because they're really good at being competitors, and there's a certain edge to that. So we're not, I'm not complaining and saying they should, I'm saying they should do less of it, but I'm not complaining at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like, so Josh Jackson's reaction, his second technical flagrant, was literally a 7-point possession for the Raptors. That's bad. Like, go foul the guy hard, don't get a flagrant, probably shouldn't get a technical. You take yourself out of the game and you already had gotten one. So it just compounded. And some people are mad about that, and I kind of understand it because I like feel like I've been in those situations, like playing Monopoly, playing pickup basketball, where like you're competitive and you just have had enough. I don't know in what situations in Monopoly you would exactly be in, so that's probably not a good example. But let's kind of switch to this. Igor has not... Does he have like one technical this year? I think he might have one.
I don't think he has one.
Well,
I'm fairly sure it's either one or zero.
Yeah, it's not two.
And he does not push it either. He will get on a referee for a couple of seconds, but there are moments when you're either trying to draw a technical or you are really, really trying to gas up your team or defend your team, and he hasn't done that, which has upset a lot of fans recently with this being such a hot topic at the moment.
So the most egregious thing he'll do is like put his arms up and you see that on TV. Now, I don't know if getting technicals very often is a good plan to motivate your team, but he definitely could work the officials more. Like, there's talk to them, at least try to get them to see your side and maybe make that call the next time. Like, if someone's setting a legal screen time and time again, for example, you've seen coaches complain about it, and then refs would be like, oh, yeah, he is doing that. But that's just not in his personality. Like,
well, it's pretty simple. He just needs to turn into Stone Cold Steve Austin for 5 seconds and bash a referee over the head with a steel chair and get tossed out of the game.
Pick your spots, and then your team will get riled up, yeah.
Or he could just take a steel chair like Stone Cold Steve Austin and bash all the referees in the head. It's very simple. I'm a wrestling fan, everyone. That was a wrestling joke.
Are you giving us commentary on the impact of that? I don't know.
Oh, it's bad.
I don't have that big of an issue with how he acts. That's who he is.
I don't.
Like, Jay Triano used to be like, I'm going to get a technical so my player doesn't, which I actually see that has value, because if it's like, I see Josh is losing it again, like last night after he got a flagrant after a technical a few minutes earlier, then maybe you are Igor thinking you want him to think, hey, I'm going to distract the refs with my own F-bombs so that you can't hear Josh's F-bombs over there or something. Like, that is a thing that like Jay Triano did really well, but I don't know. I'm not.
It just makes me think of that. Remember when Jared Dudley got tossed the last year, the year before, from the bench?
Yeah.
He got a technical and he just kept complaining because he was so over the entire thing. And he just kept talking like, I'm ready to be tossed. I just want to go to the locker room. I'm so over this. And then
Steve Kerr, was that preseason?
Yeah. I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. Whatever he said. Shout to Eric Bledsoe. What's up, dude? Maybe all-star Eric Bledsoe, by the way.
He said in that he had an SI piece on him came out today by Andrew Sharp, and Bledsoe had the very Bledsoe quote. It's in the past. What was it? Oh, yeah. control what you can control, which
control is the controllables, people.
Which is the classic Phoenix Suns.
There was a Phoenix Suns course held a couple years ago where they talked about the controllables, and if you don't know how to answer a question, say you control what you can control. Because when Brandon Knight spoke after getting benched, he said he can control what he can control about 14 times.
Can you control not saying that, please? Can you just not say that anymore?
Pipe it down.
Yeah.
On the controllables, people.
Any more thoughts on fouls? We'll see what happens.
It's a strange overall conversation to have, but we thought we should have
it. They do need to stop doing it compared to their opponent that much. And they are getting better at drawing fouls, I will say. I
think. If you were a psychopath enough to actually look up when these fouls are legitimate and when they're not, the Suns would still lead the league in this stuff by a pretty considerable margin.
Yeah.
They do foul on 95% of these possessions, or 90% or whatever. That's going to upset a lot of people that I said that, because people don't believe in that kind of thinking. But
NBA reffing is pretty good in general. I'm going to say that.
Whoa. You went three steps further than I did.
Okay. Basketball is hard. There's so much subjective crap that
It's so stupid.
I've given up on caring about offensive fouls. It is what it is. Another one from the Suns.
Ban the
PR.
Charge. Okay. I'm serious. I'm in that camp. Just ban it. It does no good. Okay. TJ Warren is having a weird month.
We had this conversation last year, huh?
He is shooting 42% in January, which isn't so bad for a lot of guys, but that's really bad for TJ. He's coming off a 5-for-16 shooting night against Toronto. Then the game before against Indiana, he was turning down open threes like 4 or 5 times. It was really strange. He was 4-of-12 against Denver, 7-of-20 against Dallas. He's in a rut right now. So that's leading to people criticizing him a bit more. How much, with that being said, I don't think those people are completely wrong. Where do you fall on his usefulness to this team, even as a three-point shooter? Because when the Suns are doing team things right, and they're executing as a team, we talked about him last week in regards to his defense, and I said that I don't think he's any good at defense right now, and I think he's at his worst when the team is at their worst, but when the team is playing good defense, he can hang around, I think.
Yeah.
But with that being said, he does not play help defense. He doesn't. He barely plays help defense. He actually makes rotations every now and then, but in terms of my man's in the corner, someone's under the rim, I need to go help on that, nothing there.
And you're a power forward.
He has terrible habits with stuff, which is a Morai staple that I think has just been passed down to him. He goes for strips a lot instead of playing on-ball defense, because he's actually not so bad at on-ball defense. But last night, he had 2 steals. He had 2 steals against Denver, and he has
strong hands,
against the Pacers.
Man.
He's actually good at it, but it's not a thing you should be doing so often. He just has bad habits. They doubled on Ibaka last night, and he was on Siakam, and he went for a steal. And whenever you're doubling, just contain everything. Don't gamble especially when you're doubling.
Yeah.
And it's those types of things where no normal team defender would ever do such a thing, but he does it. And I think his passing really went under the radar in the past 2 seasons, really his entire Suns career, because now that there is a specific person that people want to see get the ball in DeAndre Ayton, they see him open, and then they're like, why is no one passing it to him? And you see TJ with the ball looking for the post-entry pass and then just not throwing it. And you're like, oh, okay. Not a guy who averages a lot of assists. Not a guy who passes the ball that much. With that being said, he did have a 5-assist game at home against Charlotte this month. He had 3 against Denver, too. I think he's actually been a bit better with it, but that's because this system demands you to be, and he's been a little bit better. But he's still pretty terrible overall at passing the ball. So when you look at the construction of this team and what they're sort of developing into, and especially in Kokoskov's system, even with him being a three-point shooter, the team's best three-point shooter on a team that doesn't shoot well, what do they do with him?
So part of it is, and I said this because this happened last year, where he's just this unique player where he's not part of the offense all the time. And it's almost the same thing as DeAndre Ayton, where it's like, you guys need to look for him. And I don't know whether it was coaching or it just happened organically, but when he was on a roll before this latest stretch, he was like, Booker was swinging it to him on the weak side, and he would take guy off the dribble who was kind of off kilter already. And now we're not seeing that much. He's not really finding rhythm within the offense. And so he's not scoring as much. Plus, I don't know how many threes, maybe you have it up right now, but it seems like I've seen him starting to slip back into shooting like he used to.
Shooting 37.5% this month. He is 1 of 4, 1 of 2, 1 of 4, 2 of 6, 1 of 4 in his last five games.
All right, so that's...
not good.
37% still...
I saw the leg kick the other night.
Yeah, I saw the leg kick. That's what it is. I saw the leg kick.
The leg kick is
so
back.
So get rid of the leg kick, please. You did a good job half a season. Old habits are hard to break, like you said about those other things. But yeah, like, especially in this offense... yeah, he's more efficient than the other guys, but if Kelly Oubre is putting up those numbers and playing defense and doing the little things, rebounding, deflecting, helping on defense, offensive rebounds, like just from his dunks repertoire of late, a couple of really good dunks came off offensive rebounds. TJ Warren wasn't really doing that. So now it becomes, okay, Kelly, Josh, who's going to be the guy who stands out? And we're comparing them. And now TJ's back in that mix because he's kind of come back down to earth. And again, it's not like he's playing terribly, but when you have flaws and when guys have similar skill sets and can play the same positions, then we got to ask that question.
He has improved a lot. This is the first year I would say he is a legitimate threat off the dribble to score. Didn't really think he was that much prior in his career. But where that's a problem is, the best way to score off the dribble these days, the old pick and roll. What do you need to be able to do in the pick and roll? You'd be able to pass. You'd be able to make secondary reads. He's made a couple. There's been a couple here and there where I've been caught off guard and saying, whoa, that he just made a really good read on the defense and made the pass, too. I am perplexed. I am confused.
How much does he use in the pick and roll? Like, that's something that would be interesting to look at, because I feel like it's not that much.
It's not, but I believe Zach Lowe had something on him last week or 2 weeks ago where he talked about his efficiency in the pick and roll and how much better he's been there.
Yeah, it was like a really high number as far as scoring, but I don't remember if it's
that
much.
The amount of possessions wasn't that much, no.
So maybe he should be used in pick and rolls more. We'll look into that.
Or maybe he shouldn't because he's not going to make the passes.
But if he's scoring.
He is best suited in the sixth man role. We've known this for a very long time, even if he's a shooter now. And Kelly Oubre is a guy. It's funny. I hate this Kelly Oubre discussion for a lot of different reasons. I haven't really gotten involved in it. Everyone's saying you need that energy to start the game. And
nah.
I'm saying, don't you need the energy off the bench? Isn't that where the energy
is supposed
to? That's
why they're playing, yeah.
And that's why he's coming off the bench and why he's probably going to continue to come off the bench. With that being said, I think there will be a change sometime soon, and that's probably going to be it. Because they're going to have to change something with these slow starts. Or they just can't. Or they won't. Like they could just sit there and keep watching themselves be down 19 and 16 and 15 and 27 and scoring 9 points in the first quarter and keep that up, I guess. But the fundamental problem with Warren is that he is not an overall. He's an overall bad defender, and he's a horrible team defender. Even if Ayton is an okay defender in 2 or 3 years, which is very possible. It's very possible he's an okay defender next year, actually, with the progress that he's made in the past 2 months. I don't see how Warren helps Ayton besides being a floor spacer.
Yeah.
I don't see how he helps Booker besides being a secondary scoring option, but that's what Ayton is going to be once his postgame develops. And I don't understand where Warren helps again besides being a shooter, but that's not his best attribute. His best attribute is scoring and doing so off the bench. So I think I think he is the most logical guy to move for a point guard. If there's anyone on this roster to move, I think it's him. I don't think it's Josh or Oubre or no one else really comes to mind. I think he's the most logical guy to move.
Again, just how unique of a player he is, though, kind of caps his value, too, where as another team, you don't know. It's not like you can just plug him in and he's going to be like Jason Tatum and just be like, yeah, that guy can score in this many different ways. Like, he scores in specific ways. If the three's there, then that completely changes that discussion and at least gives you at least a two-level scorer, three-level, I guess. I don't know if he's that good at the rim, but yeah, he's a very interesting player when you talk about trades, when you talk about fit on any roster, not just this one. So I think that's the complex part about him, is even a good situation might be hard to fit him in.
The bottom line is the types of players you need to put around Booker Dean to succeed, he doesn't fit the profile.
Yeah.
That's...
If he's hitting 45% from three, yeah, I guess.
But if that number just goes down to 37 or 38 or 36 and you're in...
Get Dragan Bender out there.
Above average, it's not really that relevant.
Honestly. I was kind of joking.
Oh. Eh.
I was joking. I wasn't kind of joking.
You were joking. Shouts to... Come on, Dragan. I feel bad for Dragan. Hopefully he gets over to Europe for a couple of years, figures it out, and comes back.
He has a pep in his step. He's doing fine.
He's a millionaire. He'll be okay. he doesn't fit next to Booker and Ayton. You look at Jackson and Oubre and what they provide defensively and energy-wise, and it being able to do that off the bench especially is important. Obviously, Melton and Bridges, we don't need to really go any further how they fit next to those guys. Rashawn Holmes, obviously, as Ayton's backup, is a duplicate of him in some ways, does different things, is smaller, obviously doesn't dominate around the rim as much, but athletic rim runner who can make those big time plays with his athleticism. And I don't understand where Warren fits in. So if, and the thing about trading him, which is a really good point that you made, what if the other team only sees 80% of those specific things that he's good at? Then you've got a standoff with value. And he's tricky to trade in that way. He's on a good contract right now. Even if he's your sixth man, he's a sixth man on an okay team or a decent team. That's fine money-wise.
I don't think trading him this season is going to work either, because
no.
People don't want to take on that much money.
No, it's an off-season thing. And
yeah.
Yeah. I think the most important thing for this team this off-season is to take advantage of every opportunity they can to find either the point guard that goes next to Booker or the power forward that goes next to Ayton, because I don't think they have either right now. I don't think you can look at Melton and say he's the long-term guy yet. You can't go that far into the future and proclaim that. Does he have the promise to be still? I think so. But offensively, he's been very underwhelming. He needs to score. Bender had the same... We bring him up again. Bender had the same issue where he did the defense, he did the shooting, but you just need to score a little bit here and there. You need to draw fouls occasionally. You need to do something off the dribble.
Melton's shot's gone too now.
And Melton's shot has disappeared, and he's getting to his spots. You see him in transition against Toronto the other night. One dribble pull up from 18, clang. Those are the types of shots where those need to go in, and he needs to make those to survive. In that high of a regard, I think it's already clear that as a backup point guard, he's good. Like, the Suns already won that trade. They already got an NBA caliber. They got the NBA caliber player out of the four.
Yeah.
Only one NBA caliber player in that deal. Yikes. I'm not going to write off Knight actually yet, because he's coming back from the injury still, and we'll see next year. But
what was our third topic today?
It was intertwined. It was Oubre okay. Starting. I already said what I was going to say on it. I don't understand it. He's an energy guy. He comes off the bench. If Bridges didn't exist, I think it would make a lot more sense. But I think Bridges and Melton give you enough there. And
Bridges can't. I don't know if people want Bridges out of that starting lineup, but
do they want Point Book and Melton out?
I don't know. Melton and Bridges are kind of good in that starting lineup. I think they have to, like, if we're distributing talent and roles in a certain way, I think they're worse off the bench. Like, Melton's not going to score anymore off the bench, is he? Probably not. You need him playing good defense and tiring out Kyle Lowry for as much as he can. So
yeah, this is we both agree this is dumb.
Yeah.
What do you think about Elliot Kobler minutes so far? I have been not frustrated, but don't think he's ready yet.
It still feels like he's going at a snail's pace of figuring out what he's just supposed to do.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's, like, he's not aggressive because of that. Like, he's trying too hard to run the plays and do things right where, like, he has natural talent, but he's not, he's trying to figure out where he can attack and stuff, and it's just not adding much. I will say defensively, he's not disappointing as far as effort. He's not good at it.
Oh, he tries really
but
hard.
But he's trying hard. And so just from, like, when you see some French, like, what? He wasn't even in the, was he in the Pro A? I don't remember. If he's in the French league, known as a scorer, and we're surprised by how much he's even just being a point guard right now, then, like, I didn't have expectations about his defense, I guess. So, yeah.
He moves his feet really well, too. He just has no idea what he's doing.
No.
Not a clue.
No.
Rookie point guard, so, coming fresh overseas, learning how to be a point guard at the same time as learning how to play
NBA
defense.
He's not very old as a pro basketball player. So, yeah.
He's only 21.
Yeah.
Not as young as some of these guys coming straight out of their freshman year of college or whatever, but he was always a guy you looked at and said, okay, do your scoring and the other stuff's going to take a while. And he's even struggling to find his scoring. I think that's been the most frustrating part of watching him so far is the switch has only flipped once where I've seen the Elliot Kobler I watched before the draft, and that was that Clipper game where he had, like, I think it was like 8 of 12 from the field or something. He was 8 of 12 from the field, had 4 assists.
Thunder game
2, steals.
I think.
That was more garbage time.
Yeah.
And I kind of discarded that, but the Clipper game, he came in with the second unit.
That's
and
true.
Swung that game for them. They lost that game, but he was the best player for them that night. I haven't seen him click as a primary ball handler except that night, and that's been the most frustrating part of watching him so far because I expected a little bit more out of him as a scorer. But we're going to continue to see him. He's averaging 17.4 minutes this month. He was basically not really playing in stretches. He, of course, started, and then Melton took over, and Jamal Crawford was getting those minutes, but there's something going on there. Crawford has missed multiple.
Everyone's so skeptical.
Crawford has missed a lot of games due to a sore left knee. I think this is 5 or 6 now. And then one of those was he missed it due to personal reasons. And then I believe the first of those games was a coach's decision. So not really sure what's going on there. We can't really speculate because there's nothing to speculate. They're listing him as out with a sore left knee. So we have to just take it for what it is that he's out with a sore left knee until we hear otherwise. If I played basketball as much as he did, I think my left knee would be pretty sore.
Yeah.
So I can't say anything on it, but it's good to see. I think that this is a prime example of come for Igor Twitter and his rotations and everything is we're getting both rookie point guards playing 15 minutes a game at least now and no one's noticing at all.
Yeah.
Because it's just happening and the thing everyone was begging for. Why aren't they playing the young guys? Well, they're doing it right now.
This is what happens.
This is what happens. 2 rookie point guards being your point guard rotation, this is what's going to happen. You know what was interesting? Before the Toronto game, I looked up the net ratings for this month, and Booker had the worst net rating on the team.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And then, thank the Lord, he came out in the Raptors game and looked like himself. But it was taking him a minute. I don't know if he pushed himself back or he's never come back from back spasms before or never dealt with that type of injury, but it was clear in that Indiana game. I thought he was actually getting to his spots right, but his feel was all over the place. He didn't seem like he was ready yet.
Yeah.
And then in Toronto, he kind of willed himself to it looked like. But, man, how much longer are we going to have to deal with this type of thing where you look at his game log from this season And yes, he's missed 13 games or 14, 12, whatever it was. Yeah. But how about the two games we exited early? How about the games where he came back too soon? There was a stretch of 9 or 10 games where he was clearly playing at 70, 60, 50% coming back from the hamstring the first time.
Yeah.
And then there's the Indiana game. So now you're talking 25 games, and there's been 45 in the season where he's clearly not been 100%. You could argue in the Dallas, the opener, he wasn't 100% coming back from the hand. He said so.
Well, we've got a good amount of season ahead of us for him to not get hurt more and to prove that he's just been a little bit by bad luck, I guess.
That's got to be up at 1A and 1B. 1A is
you want to see him finish it.
Ayton's continued progression over the season, not plateauing or hitting the rookie wall, continuing to run through it. He hit it really hard in his first month and a half, was still productive despite that, but I think we actually saw real improvement. I wrote something over around Christmas time about that, and he has continued to do so. We said it before we turned on the mics. He was great in the Toronto game. They attacked him a lot in the fourth quarter defensively, but he was doing a lot of things that I really liked, and that Siakam buzzer beater, he was there. It wasn't
the stealth shot of it was,
crazy. Siakam's hand was at the backboard box, pretty much. And what can
Ayton's
you do?
His hand was a few inches away from the ball, I think. So
it wasn't 10 out of 10 rim protection, but it was an 8.5, an 8. It was pretty solid, and Siakam just made a terrific play. And it was crazy, some people that were coming for Ayton on that.
Yeah,
and just
of all things.
It's weird, the defense, talking about the defense and good and bad defense, because you want to blame him, but 2 months ago, he's not even in that spot. That's an open layup for Siakam. Bridges got blown by, and that's a layup, but he got there. And so his continued progression, and then I think the other storyline is just Booker staying healthy and playing at the level we know he can for the rest of the season, so he's fresh going into next season. Because if he spends this whole season playing through injuries or dealing with injuries and he can't even really get his feet set for 20, 25 games straight, that's where I start to become legitimately concerned that this is actually a thing that we're going to have to deal with for the next 5-6 years with him. Because there's no other way to do it.
Hey, we're 2 weeks plus into the new year, and the Suns are still, what is our term of relevant? I almost said relevant, and I was like, no, that's not the right word, but to us, they are.
They're buzzworthy to
a certain extent. They're buzzworthy.
To a certain extent.
Zach Lowe bothered to write about one of their basketball players again.
They're far from buzzworthy on a national extent, but locally, they're still very much the buzz around. You know what's crazy? Speaking of 2 weeks, the trade deadline is about 2.5 weeks away.
I guess we should,
We'll talk about that either next week or the week after if we think there's anything there. I think we kind of hinted at it with TJ already that we're not expecting too much.
Oh my gosh.
But
you're spoiling it.
Well,
now no one's going to listen to the next.
Don't listen to any other episodes. This is your last one. Goodbye. Oh, you're going to end it there?
Oh.
What? Subscribe on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars, please, or 1 star. Just be honest. All we want is honesty here. Anything else to add, Kevin, before we head out?
No, man.
Okay, now I am ending the podcast. Goodbye. See you later. Have a good day. Adios.